So look at this. Pfizer executives have discussed hiking the vaccine price after the pandemic wanes. They basically were caught saying that the pandemic is not going to end. It's going to turn endemic. And when it turns endemic, they're going to make a boatload of money off that vaccine that they made. That is what they were caught saying here. Let me just read you the story, and then we're going to go into the implications of this, because one big question I think many of us should have is, then what the hell is the vaccine? I mean, did you create it with the intention to end COVID, or did you create it with the intention to stall so that you could continue to make more and have it not really cure anything, but just kind of subside some things? And then, like, what is this? What are we doing here? So it says a top executive for Pfizer suggested to investors last week that pricing for its COVID-19 vaccine could increase post-pandemic. So not only are they excited that COVID is going to continue on and on and on forever, forever. That's what endemic is, forever. It'll be here forever. But they're saying they're going to actually hike up the price of the vaccine. The suggestion raises questions about whether a drug developed at the behest of the federal government to respond to a global crisis could turn a profit for one company. The possibility was raised by Carter Lewis Gold, a senior analyst for biopharma equity research at Barclays, during a virtual global healthcare conference hosted by the bank. Gold, referencing comments made by Pfizer executives over the summer, asked how the pharmaceutical company still envisioned pursuing higher pricing as we move from a pandemic to an endemic phase. According to an edited transcript of the conversation, says, quote, clearly got a lot of focus on the street, and in particular, some of your comments around the potential for higher pricing, Gold said of Pfizer's summer suggestion. I think one of the things that people point to is both the optics of that as well as some of their experience with the flu market. Now, this is absolutely different, but I was hoping you could maybe give us a little bit more depth on your thoughts here and around the potential to pursue higher pricing down the road. So what are you thinking about, you know, pursuing higher prices down the road? Let's hear from you. So in response, Frank A. Diamolo, CFO and Executive VP of Global Supply for Pfizer, said the company anticipates a, quote, significant opportunity for its vaccine from, quote, a pricing perspective as we move, quote, from a pandemic situation to an endemic situation. He says, quote, so if you look at how current demand and current pricing is being driven, it's clearly not being driven by what I'll call normal market conditions, normal market forces. It's really being driven by kind of the pandemic state that we've been in and the needs of governments to really secure doses from the various vaccine suppliers, Diamolo explained. So what I believe, as we move from a pandemic state, from a pandemic situation to an endemic situation, normal market forces, normal market conditions will start to kick in. And factors like efficiency, booster ability, clinical utility will basically become very important. And we view that as, quite frankly, a significant opportunity for our vaccine from a demand perspective, from a pricing perspective, given the clinical profile of our vaccine, he said. So clearly more to come here. But we think as this shifts from pandemic to endemic, we think there's an opportunity here for us. So that is what the Pfizer executive said, and this raises a lot of questions. The first question is, did they ever really think they were going to be curing the disease? Or were they thinking that they were instead going to just continue? Maybe they could mitigate the disease a little bit, and then they could then, rather than cure it, you know, maybe they could have come up with a vaccine, maybe. You know, and that would be the real scandal, right? If we found out that later on that all of these big pharma companies that we put so much trust into the big pharma companies, big mistake, by the way, you know, especially all of these anti-establishment progressives for years going after big pharma, saying that they were just all on the take and that they had bought off our government and it was all just a big racket. And then suddenly the pandemic hits and all of them are like, oh, save us, big pharma. And now here we go. This is why you could never trust them, because then they come out and say, well, you know what? Yeah, okay, it's a pandemic right now. And so, you know, we're kind of at the behest of these governments. But once it turns into an endemic and it becomes like the flu, we can make money on this like the flu shot. And we can actually put a lot of money, raise up the prices, you know, hike up the cost. Because it's not about saving lives. This isn't about ending COVID. This is about opportunity. And so what they're seeing right here, what they're admitting is we got an opportunity with this virus and we're going to go and milk it. And it kind of makes you wonder, you know, and we see this about many, many things. Why is there no cure for cancer? Right? We're able to do so many amazing, innovative things, and yet we don't have a cure for cancer. We also don't have, interestingly, a cure for AIDS. Somebody should ask, you know, many of us are asking these questions, but somebody should ask these researchers and pharmaceutical companies directly. Congress really should be doing that, doing their job, but of course they don't. And they say, and you know, they were instead propping these guys up, acting like, oh, our saviors, the big pharma companies, the big saviors of the day, here they are. They're going to come up with a cure for COVID, and we're all going to have to take it, and we're going to have these vaccine passports as well. Because if we want to get back to normal, we're going to have to get the jab, and we're all going to have to do it collectively. You know, this is what we're still hearing in the media. And they basically promoted this nonstop, only to now find out that even the big pharma companies are saying, we don't think this is going to end. In fact, we kind of hope it doesn't, so that we can make a bunch of money off of it. We have no desire to cure it. They have no desire to cure AIDS. They have no desire to cure cancer, and they have no desire to cure COVID. And this is apparent. And anyone who thought otherwise, who thought for some reason Big Pharma was going to be the big savior of the day, unfortunately, I hope this is a bit of a smack in the face. It should have never, that should have never been the plan ever with this, because we all should have known the writing was on the wall with these big pharma companies. They have shown us who they are time and time again. And suddenly you want to believe there's something different this time, because yeah, but this time it's different because it's a bad virus that's killing a lot of people. And they're not acting any differently than they are with anything else that kills a lot of people. They see opportunity, they see dollar signs, and they see no problem with hiking up the price of the vaccine once this hits what they call endemic state, which is basically just, we all get over it and realize it isn't going anywhere. And we all just have to live with it. And we all have to come out of our homes, and we all have to start living normally. And there's nothing we can really do. That sheltering in place is not actually going to solve the problem, that this isn't going to go away. And once we reach that point, we'll be in endemic stage. And this will just be here to stay forever as an endemic, like the flu. It's just here. It comes, it goes, it comes, it goes. We're all used to it. And some people go and they get a shot. And half of America, I think the stat is like 30% to 50% go and get it. And so that is what we're seeing here. So, you know, I think this is, a lot of us should ask the few key questions on this is, one, did these big pharma companies even attempt to try to actually cure COVID, to end it? Did they even try? Was that even really truly on their agenda? Because when this came out, what did we all start hearing immediately? Immediately we started hearing, yeah, but you're still going to have to wear your mask. Maybe even two or three. You're still going to have to socially distance. You still can't be around anybody. And it's because you can still spread it even after you get this shot. So because you can still spread it, you're not protecting anyone else. You're only protecting yourself, because this is supposed to help you not feel the effects of the disease if you get it. This is supposed to help mitigate the disease. So it's not really a vaccine as much as it is a medicine. Or, you know, I mean, it kind of depends on your definition. They've kind of altered the definition of vaccines over the years. But essentially, they're saying you could still potentially spread it. You're not necessarily safe. And they were saying this thing, and it kind of made a lot of people wonder, like, wait a minute, what were we doing? I thought we were waiting and sheltering in place because you said you were going to come out with a vaccine, and that vaccine would then bring us back to normal. But now you're telling us, even with the shot, we can't go back to normal. We still have to do all of these things. Actually, we have to double down. And then you find out that these executives are sitting there saying, what can we do to make a bunch of money off of this? So then you wonder, did they even try to end this virus, to crush the virus, as Nancy Pelosi was saying? We're going to crush COVID. Did they even try to actually crush COVID? Or were they just saying, yeah, let's just sort of help a little. And then, by the way, let's roll this out during a time when all the stats show it's already going down. So no matter where or how many jabs they've gotten by per population percentage-wise, it's all gone down the same. You know, you look at a country like Israel, which has inoculated nearly 100% of their population, and you look at a country like Portugal, who's inoculated like 10% of their population, and look at their curves, identical in both deaths and spread. And we're seeing this all across the board. It doesn't really matter how many, what the percentage is. It's not correlating with a decline. And so We won't know. You know, we won't know. One thing interesting is we won't know how effective these have been. I think they're probably somewhat. I would think that there is some effectiveness there for sure. We just won't know how much, really. You know, they're kind of giving us these various different estimates, and then they change those. You know, we're kind of hearing this constant fluctuation of estimates changing. And we wouldn't really know unless they did the one thing they're surprisingly not really doing. The one thing to do in order to test whether or not this works is obvious. And that is, you go and you start jabbing everybody in the Southern Hemisphere, because they're in the summer right now. So a lot of people are like, well, look at Australia, New Zealand, they're doing great. Well, that's because they've been in their summer. They're all outside enjoying the sunshine. But they're hitting their winter soon. Their winter is our summer. So they're getting into their winter. And when they get into their winter is when they start to see their spread. So it only makes sense, right? South Africa, South America, Australia, these areas, right? New Zealand. It only makes sense that if you want to test and know for sure how effective these really are, you don't go after a population that's already seeing a decline. You go after a population that hasn't hit their wave yet, but you know the wave is coming. So you go after them, right? Oh, but guess what they're doing? Oh, funny. They're saying we can't. Because guess what? Turns out that those southern areas like New Zealand now, they're saying, oh no, we might have the South African variant. South Africa obviously has a South African variant. So now they're saying, oh, but they are all getting these other variants and our stuff doesn't work on them. So they're not going into those areas and flooding them with jabs when they would need it in advance to stop the wave from coming. So why aren't they doing that? Why aren't they doing that? Well, you know, and I think you could kind of deduce maybe why they're not doing that, but they're not. And then we can wonder why. And then you kind of sit here and you think when you hear that these Pfizer executives are sitting around saying, well, this is going to just keep going and going and going. And when it does, we're going to make a lot of money off of it. Yeah. So, why did anybody ever trust them to begin with on this as to be the key for this ending, to be the key indicator to opening up the gates for us getting out of this? Big Pharma, the companies that just want to make a bunch of money and that won't cure anything that makes them boatloads of cash. And this is just another thing that's included in it. So we won't really know, you know, and again, I am not at all an anti-vaxxer. I'm not somebody that's saying don't take this. I think this is a very personal decision and you do what you think is best for you and your family. You know the data, know the research, know the reality, and then make a decision for yourself. And so that is what you do. You know, that is what you ultimately do. In my family, grandma's 94 years old, turning 94 this month. Got our second jab today in 2 weeks. We're excited. We get to be together as a family because she, the one who's the most vulnerable, we hope will be protected. At least it's better than nothing. And for us, she's 94 years old. You know, I mean, long-term side effects are not necessarily something she's all that concerned about right now. It's more of like the short-term side effects. So, you know, everybody's got to kind of think about that. But look, when they're sitting here saying, you're going to have to keep getting it again and again and again, that this is just essentially going to be a flu shot. Then what does that mean exactly? And half of the people, or if not more than half the people, don't even get a flu shot. Why do they not get a flu shot? Because they don't feel like the flu is particularly dangerous for them. And I think for many people, that is exactly how this virus has been as well. Maybe new variants will mean something different for different age groups. We don't know. That would have to, you know, is yet to be seen. Anything can change. Anything can happen. But just wanted to share this with you guys that it's not actually these big pharma companies are doing what they do. And we now have more evidence of that they're doing exactly what they do, which is they're just in it for the money and not actually for the health. And that's the reality of it. All right, coming up next, turns out that the fraudulent media at times, the establishment media, showing themselves once again as fake news. We're going to talk about the retraction, about them misquoting Trump when it comes to the Georgia election. You know how they were saying he was putting pressure on the Georgia election officials, trying to strong arm them into finding what he wanted And now they're saying, well, okay, that maybe wasn't exactly true. Surprise, surprise. We're going to talk about that. That is coming up next. Well, the establishment media does it again. They show that they are happy to run fake news if it fits their agenda. So we all heard about Trump pressuring the Georgia elections officials. They even talked about this during the impeachment hearings. They brought this up and many, many news outlets reported on this. Here's the Washington Post reporting on it. They said Trump pressured a Georgia elections investigator. In a separate call, legal experts say could amount to obstruction. Right. This was the headline that they were touting. And this actually ran, this same story ran in outlet after outlet after outlet. It wasn't just the Washington Post that ran this story, but every other outlet picked it up. It became big news all over CNN, as you know, all over MSNBC. And like I said, it was even brought up during the impeachment. So this was a big story. And they ran this story. This is sort of, it's very similar to what happened with the Hunter Biden story, except the opposite. Now, remember with the Hunter Biden story, everybody was saying, I'm not even willing to entertain that story. Twitter actually shut down New York Post. They didn't allow anybody to share it. Same with Facebook. We saw them silencing and censoring and shutting down the Hunter Biden story with his laptop and connections and all of that kind of stuff that was going on with Hunter Biden. And you saw, certain journalists, NPR and various different outlets and journalists saying we won't even entertain that bull crap. You know, that's not real journalism and we're not here for that. And then it turns out the story was true. And all of those real journalists who said they wouldn't even touch that story ended up being proven wrong. The story ended up being true. And the real journalists didn't do their due diligence. They didn't actually do journalism. They didn't actually go and try to find out the source, interview the source and sniff it out and find out if there was any merit to the story. Had they done that, maybe they would have found that there was something to the story, but they just immediately, blindly, because somebody said, nah, it's fake, fake news, Russians planted it. They said, oh yeah, we're not going to even entertain that story that the Russians planted. And then the story turned out to be true. That's our modern journalism. This is why people are losing faith in establishment media, because time and time again, they've shown their bias. Time and time again, they've showed that they're actually not for getting to the bottom of things. They're not for exposing their truth. They're instead sort of like the first thing I talked about tonight, really, with The Bachelor and the ultra woke crowd. It's all for clicks. It's all for money. It's all for eyeballs. And what has worked over the last four, now 5 years, for these establishment media organizations, especially organizations such as the Washington Post, New York Times, publications that were dying. They were on their last leg. They were losing out to new media sources. They instead found their second wind by going after Trump, by constantly talking Trump all the time, by making him to be the sole bad guy on the planet. And in doing that, they wouldn't expose the misdeeds of others on the Democratic side of the aisle, the same misdeeds that they were accusing Trump of. They wouldn't look into those. No, because they needed their villain to remain Trump, orange man bad. And that was the narrative the entire time. That's what made them money. That's what made them relevant again. No one was watching MSNBC before Trump. CNN was dying. Washington Post, New York Times, all of these establishment mainstream sources were going by the wayside until Trump came along, and it was their greatest blessing. And so they ran with absolutely every single story they could get their hands on, even if the story was fake. And that's now what we're seeing today with the retraction that the Washington Post put up, the correction. So here it is again. This was the original headline. Trump pressured a Georgia elections investigator in a separate call legal experts say could amount to obstruction. And then they say here now, correction. 2 months after publication of this story, the Georgia Secretary of State released an audio recording of President Donald Trump's December phone call with the state's top elections investigator. The recording revealed that the Post misquoted Trump's comments on the call based on information provided by a source, by the way, an anonymous source. It says Trump did not tell the investigators to find the fraud or say she would be a national hero if she did so. Instead, Trump urged the investigator to scrutinize ballots in Fulton County, Georgia, asserting that she would find dishonesty there. He also told her that she had, quote, the most important job in the country right now. A story about the recording can be found here. The headline and text of this story have been corrected to remove quotes misattributed to Trump. So the story originally, remember when he called up the governor of Florida and he was like, you got to find the votes, right? And then there was a follow up and they said, it gets worse. The investigator, he actually pressured the investigator, telling her to find the fraud and that she would be a national hero if she did so, using his political power as president of the United States to put pressure on her to make her feel like she had to find his outcome, that she was an investigator and he was pressuring her to come up with the outcome he wanted. He was obstructing justice of this from this investigation. And now it turns out, and that's the story they ran, all of these media outlets, that's the story that they ran with. They ran with that story. And then it turns out there was an actual recording. They were going after, based on a source, an anonymous source. And then all of these other news outlets said, yeah, we corroborated that with that same anonymous source. Just one anonymous source, not multiple sources, one anonymous source. And they said, yeah, okay. So they decided to run with this and they even used it in the impeachment hearings. And now it turns out there's an actual recording of the phone call. Whoops. Ooh. And it turns out, no, I didn't really say any of that. Oh, shoot. There really wasn't any pressure at all in the phone call. In fact, all he said was, you know, go out there and look, investigate, I guess, you know, go and investigate. And you have the most important job in the country. You're an investigator. So this is what he told her to do. So he said that she would find, if she went and looked in Fulton County, he said, I think you're going to find some dishonesty there. And you have the most important job in the country right now. So look, I mean, it's amazing to me even to this day that when I tell someone something, like I share a story with someone, they will say to me, well, who's the source, right? Like normal conversation with a family member or a friend, they'll say, who's the source? And then you say, oh, well, this came from the Washington Examiner, right? Or this came from the New York Post. They scoff at that. Show me one that comes from the New York Times or the Washington Post. Give me trusted sources. Don't give me your biased sources. Like Fox, don't give me your biased sources. Give me my trusted sources. The trusted sources are the only ones I want to hear from. But the problem is we can't trust these sources. They're not trustworthy sources anymore. They instead, and I don't know when they were. I would have to look back and figure out when did they become so dishonest? Like, where was the turning point? What happened to our news in this country? What happened to honest, unbiased news, to just boring news? Because that's really the most honest source, right? The one that's really boring. Because they're just saying, here's the facts. These are the facts, and that's all. And then you get to make up your own mind on the opinion. That's what I do, right? I read the facts, and then I say, ah, this is kind of crazy. Let's, you know, what does this mean? What does this mean for society? What does this mean for us? What is this? Is this a trend? You know, that is where people then go and they dissect, and they want to talk about that and converse about that. That's fine. That is what we do with the news. But the problem is, we're not getting any news. We don't have any sources anymore that are just raw, just boring, facts only news. Everything is opinion these days, and everything is bias. And particularly these ones that are bought off in a certain way, they have a monetary motivation, even if they're bought off, not by some big oligarch hiding in the shadows, but just by the people that read them. They know they can't upset their liberal readers. And so they just continue feeding them exactly the stories with the slant that they want. And it doesn't matter if it's the truth or not. All that matters is they're making money. All that matters is that they're selling subscriptions. All that matters is that they're getting you on their news site, reading story after story after story. You can't get enough. They're radicalizing you to keep you coming back so that you have to get more, and you have to get more from them. That is what they want. Because unfortunately, the news business is a money needing. It's a money needing business. They need money. And so in doing that, they have to have all these clickbait stories, clickbait titles, and they've gone beyond. It just started off at first with the clickbait title, which was bad enough, right? Because somebody would read the headline and they wouldn't go beyond the headline. They would just read the headline and then say, ah, this is what happened. This is terrible. Ah, right. And then if you read the whole story, it's like, well, okay, maybe it doesn't really exactly align with the headline, but it's gotten worse because that was bad enough. But now they're just lying during the article. Now the articles themselves are clickbaity in nature. And the sources, this whole reeling into this, an anonymous source said, this is the problem with these anonymous sources. And if you're going to have an anonymous source, you better have multiple. But instead, they say, okay, we got one anonymous source. This one anonymous source says this horrible thing, and it's about somebody that our readers absolutely hate. So we're going to run with the story, and we don't care how truthful it actually is. And then the worst part about it is other publications pick it up and say, okay, yeah, then we will too. And they all got in on it. And it was the same thing with the Hunter Biden story. They all got in on it. They all refused to actually do journalism because it would be against the narrative that they have been feeding their viewers. They've been feeding their readers this particular narrative, and they don't want to give them something different, because the minute they get something different, they know what the result is of that. People do not like change. They like their biases. They want them to be validated. And the minute you tell them something they don't like, they say unsubscribe. I feel it all the time on this channel. Like, I unsubscribe from you, Kim. Unsubscribe. I can't believe you. But for me, you're unsub. You can unsub from me. It doesn't change my income. It doesn't. I don't charge you for subscribing to the YouTube channel or to any other. You know, if you follow on Rockfin, you don't necessarily have to pay. You could just follow. Now, you could threaten me with an unsub there, but then you're unsubbing from a lot of other people, and you wouldn't do that. It's not, you're not paying me directly. So that threat doesn't work as well. But in a place like Washington Post, that's very different. If I call them up and say I'm unsubscribing, they're actually losing my $10 a month. And if they get enough of those people because they pissed him off by running a piece that was actually, I don't know, flattering to Trump. I mean, could you imagine? They would lose a lot of viewers. They would lose a lot of subscriptions. They would lose a big chunk of money, and they can't afford that. So what do? They continue to feed their audience sometimes truth, sometimes lies, but all of it with the intention of making money. And I kind of feel like that has been the theme of tonight's show. Everything has been about making money. Everything that we're seeing around us, a lot of it is exaggerations or lies or opportunism. And all of it has been really about trying to make a buck from being ultra woke and getting your name out there and being a celebrity in the woke culture. from The Bachelor trying to get in on that wokeism in order to boost their ratings and get people like me talking about them so that it boosts their visibility. All press is good press. So they ride in on that woke train saying, let's go ahead and make some money. All of that was to make money. The big pharma companies saying, wow, we got a pandemic on our hands. This is great. We can make a big, make a medicine, tell everybody they have to have it. You need this or else. And then we just allow this virus to continue on and on and on forever in an endemic. And then we raise the prices and we make even more money because you're afraid, because we spent a year making you scared to leave your house. And all you want desperately, all of us want desperately, is to get back to normal. But the only way you can is if you take their medicine. And now you're going to have to take their medicine every single year, apparently. And they're going to hike the price on it, too.